Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat, beat.
We get beat, beat.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you on a Wednesday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Mr. Jay Moore back next week. Busy one. Buddy Husker Baseball, thoughts on where to watch your beloved Huskers next year, and a formula that'll help determine over and underachievers the past 10 years. Thanks to Brandon Vogel for that. Hope you're doing all right. Busy show today. Can join us on Hail Varsity Radio. Tap the line with your friends at Chilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House. Can dial us up at 402-466-3776, 466-3776. Or toll free 1-800-825-5865 across the Hail Varsity Network. Here's what we have in store. 15 minutes away, Mike Babcock, historian, author, Hall of Famer, 39 years and counting of Nebraska coverage. Babbers in 15 minutes. We will get his thoughts on Nebraska and the Corvallis Regional. Also, talk Black Friday football games on ABC. Because that's where they've been for the last 1,000 years. No more. I'll explain in a minute. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment coming up in about 30 minutes. And Shuey will join us. We'll spend some time talking Tiger, that whole mess. Get Shuey's thoughts and hear some just great stuff about what's going on at Wilderness Ridge. Team Jack Foundation, their golf outing at Cory Oaks, June 24th. Each week we've been lucky enough to have a member of Team Jack, folks that used to play at Nebraska and do a great job of providing outreach and support for the Team Jack Foundation. Spencer Long, Elkhorn product, All-American offensive lineman at Nebraska, starting center for the Washington Redskins with us in 1 hour. And we'll get caught up with Ben Miller, also Nebraska first baseman. They are off to Corvallis. So we'll talk some Husker baseball in hour two. Teej, what do you know?
Been busy. Been running around with my head chopped off a little bit today, but that's all right.
Your hair still looks good.
Yeah, got to keep that going. But yeah, ready to talk some Husker football, man.
Well,
and some start times. Okay. It's got people fired up a little bit.
It had me fired up, and then I did my research, and I quickly asked you to put a sock in my mouth. Okay, because here's what you have. You have the new TV deal with Fox. Fox and ABC, I mean, Nebraska and the Big Ten, you are just getting boatloads of money. Which is great.
Mm-hmm.
It goes for all things you need. And Nebraska's reputation and history, care for the student athlete, all those things made Nebraska attractive when they jumped into the Big Ten fraternity house. Okay? So you're going to get paid to perform. So the Big Ten is in with Fox. And I know Fox owns part of the Big Ten network. And the email that came out, and Keith Mann announced this, kind of said kickoff times. And I'm like, all right, this is an all good, almost June discussion point, because now you have some information. Now you can plan what time to throw the ribs on the smoker. Oregon, Nebraska will not be a night game. It'll be an afternoon game out in Eugene. It'll be a 3:30 central kick. It'll be on Fox National. So where you tune in to watch New York and Dallas, it's going to be weird because Nebraska's been on Fox sparingly.
Mm-hmm.
The one time that I remember them being on Fox, it didn't end well against Wisconsin. But for the most part, a lot of these non-conference games, well, let me just take that back. Two of the non-conference and three conference games are going to be on Fox. Now, Nebraska will have an opportunity to earn their way for some ABC love and some eyeballs. But my first, and this is straight up, pinky in the air, putting a fan hat on for a second. You're drinking what? You know, maybe I'm a beer snob, but somebody shows up to a party with Old Milwaukee. And if you're an Old Milwaukee guy, good for you. But that's what you're bringing me? Okay? I'm a snot. Sorry. I'm just being honest. Mm-hmm. But I had that type of reaction because Nebraska, to me, has now moved to the Old Milwaukee of networks, FS1. I know I can watch. Huh? I can watch Cowherd. I can watch Skip. And I can watch soccer. And I can watch the Big 12 shootouts on FS1. No more. Because you have Nebraska now on FS1. Then I talked to Vogel, and I talked to you, and I got on my stupid iPad, and I found out that, you know what? People watch FS1. It just doesn't come to mind of where you go to watch college football. And matchups determine eyeballs. I get that. But I just don't think FS1 is where I want to go to watch college football. Not that the talent's bad.
That's where I want to go. I want to watch shootouts.
Not that it's something that can't be okay, but it's just an afterthought because it's not been providing college football forever. It's not been around forever.
It hasn't been around that long.
So it's just new. And new and different compared to what you get on ABC or ESPN or even the job Gus and the gang at Fox do when they do cover it. I mean, they're awesome. I mean, they're national dudes. They're very talented. It's just, man, it's just weird being on FS1 for Nebraska. But it'll work out because Nebraska's a name. Nebraska fans will watch, and I think Fox will be happy with it. Before we jumped on the air, I've completely backtracked from my disgust because you were just sitting there listening to me just bitch and moan, and then I see the numbers, and I'm like, okay, I will shut up and get my stuff together here.
Well, I just like it because this has all come full circle now. Now, remember a week ago we had this?
Corn and sadness. Like, right. There's nothing there.
Right.
And his whole thing was, you know, since Nebraska's not the main attraction on TV anymore, everybody else is like, that's really hurt them. And people are like, yeah, whatever, crazy guy. But I was like, you know, as far as factors goes, that was kind of up high for me. Like, there's a lot of things that sad Nebraska slipped to where they are now, and I think that's one of them.
Bury them. It's just they're not.
Oh yeah,
they're not drawing. They're not drawing Bama numbers anymore.
Yeah, they're not doing what they used to do in the '90s and the '70s. Okay, like yeah,
or
you're still doing pretty well. But then today we have people seeing that we're playing on FS1. And people are freaking out on Twitter like, holy crap, who's going to see us? Nobody's going to be able
right?
to see us.
So that was my first knee-jerk reaction.
So and it's like, you can't have it both ways, people. Like, come on.
No, and your job will be to help build the audience. FS1 has had teams like Oklahoma. I mean, Oklahoma, Texas was on there last year, and I think Sammy McEwen put this tweet out, and it drew 2.7 million viewers. And, man, it was clockwork. Oklahoma, Texas was always the noon game on ABC. But for years, it was always Florida State, Miami, week three. I mean, you haven't seen a primetime Florida State, Miami game. They've been on, but it's not been clockwork like the 90s.
No.
Things have shifted.
Mm-hmm.
It has shifted. You always used to get Notre Dame, Michigan at noon on that first Saturday or second Saturday in September. They don't play each other anymore all the time. Here's the big takeaway I have. I'm wondering how things will work out, and obviously records and stature and standings and the game meaning something will have a lot to say between now and Black Friday. But Nebraska, Iowa, 3:00, FS1, that's where you're exiled. And I understand last year's game was someone, you know, knocked me out. It was a blowout. But 2 years ago, when you had a teetering Nebraska team that was playing better in November, and you had an unbeaten Lince Ruin Iowa's party type setup, a lot of people watched that Iowa-Nebraska game. A lot of people have watched Iowa-Nebraska on ABC on Black Friday at 2:30. Losing that window.
Well, for sure.
Losing that window, I'm saying from a national standpoint, isn't good because Nebraska's been on ABC either at 2:30 or 11 o'clock since 1991. That's a long, long, long time of here's where you're at. It's familiarity. Casual fan, diehard fan, national college football fan, don't care about the Big 8, the Big 12, the Big 10. You at least knew Nebraska was going to be on. And they're likely going to be good or it'd be a crazy game, all those games against Colorado or Oklahoma.
So would you say you now maybe agree with a little bit what that guy said last week, and now we're getting relegated to FS1, and since we're not now the main attraction, that hurts Nebraska's brand?
No, I think there's just better options out there. It's not necessarily, it's kind of a Seinfeld, it's not you, it's me type thing. Mm-hmm. I think that FS1 and ABC will look at some better options, and I don't have the old Phil Steele college football Bible in front of me with must-see games.
Yeah.
I mean, the other game that is your Black Friday game is usually the Egg Bowl, Ole Miss, Mississippi State on that Friday, mm-hmm. or it's LSU, Arkansas. Memory
yeah.
serves.
Yeah. Unless I mean, there's less games on that day than the Saturday.
Unless they've
yeah.
screwed the schedule around mm-hmm. a little bit, but those are the two Friday games that you play, and they used to have A&M and Texas play.
Yep.
On that thing. Usually that was a Thanksgiving night game. They switched that around. So I think unless Iowa and Nebraska are both one loss or unbeaten, then who cares? People will tune in for it. But for the longest time, they would throw Washington State, the Apple Cup, in past years with some intrigue because you've had good Washington teams.
Yeah.
And Leach is crazy and we love him. But people would watch that in the afternoon. It'd be in, you know, Pullman or in Seattle. That was the game FS1 would have while Nebraska stayed on ABC. I think it's a punch to the face for Nebraska and where they've been locked in on Black Friday for Fridays for the last generation, not having that.
Oh, I don't know, man. Because I asked you about the Colorado because you said they would switch from 11 to 2:30, right? It wasn't always set.
It was always one or the other.
And now you're just half an hour behind. Like, that's...
No, I'm talking the network flip. People will find it, but you kind of were just forced to take it, I guess. Whether you like Colorado or Nebraska or Iowa, Nebraska, mm-hmm. it was there, yeah. and you just kind of put up with it at the in-laws. And I'm thinking through the mind of a national college football fan. If you're in Jersey or if you're in California, whatever. But now Nebraska's moved off that known slot, and I think I don't like trading FS1 for ABC. Or vice versa, trading ABC for FS1.
And you'd rather be on Big Ten Network than FS1, personally,
I
right?
thought that until I saw the numbers that FS1's pulled in. They routinely do 500,000 to 600,000 to 1,000,000 plus.
Yeah. It just kind of looked like the ESPN2 range.
Yeah, it beat ESPN2 in a lot of instances, and it crushed ESPN News. So I'm all for getting off the Ocho, okay? But for Nebraska and Iowa to not be on ABC, I think that's not a good thing.
I can get with that.
Right. Yeah. Otherwise, look, I mean, Friday night games surprisingly have drawn well, very well on FS1.
Yeah.
Like, and the matchups have helped.
K-State game.
Yeah, the matchups have helped. So they've hit over 1,000,000 there, which is surprising because, you know, you're doing other things on Friday night. But I'm interested to see how that Illinois Nebraska game, the 7 o'clock kick on FS1 for the Friday night game, will shake out. Rutgers, who cares? No one wants to watch them. Northern Illinois, who cares? It's an 11 o'clock. You still got to play them.
Yeah,
and at least you're on TV to be seen.
Yeah, and we'll see what time and network they give us for the opening game. Arkansas State, that hasn't been announced yet, but
no, but getting
only
on,
one 11 o'clock game so far. I like that.
Getting on Fox though is going to be okay. I mean, there's more of a brand recognition buildup with Fox being a player in college football. And that's where, when Oregon's been great, I remember seeing them early on in the year on Fox.
Yeah.
This is the Mariota years when they had when they hosted Michigan State. They were teetering, and then Mariota and those guys blew out Sparty. That was, I think, Mariota's redshirt freshman year. Might have been 2013, I think. So what I'm saying here is Fox is still a good national spot, and they've done well with some of the Big 12 games. The other part of this, too, I think maybe there's more love and intrigue nationally and more cachet with the Big 10 brand, hence why Fox is paid to get the rights and these teams versus some of the Big 12 options.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of crazy, backyard football, stereotyping Okie State or Texas Tech or Baylor or TCU. But looking at some of the numbers, I just thought, for an example, I think week 8 or 9, you had almost 600,000 people watch TCU, Oklahoma State. TCU was an 8 or 9 win team last year that was extremely explosive offensively. Same with Oklahoma State. And they were just buried.
Mm-hmm.
They were just buried with other options.
Oh, yeah.
They were buried on a new network that's just gotten kind of their foot in the door to bring college football.
Yeah.
In.
I would have liked to see maybe who the other matchups were at that time. Maybe they were better options to see, but yeah, that's not a great number.
No, it's not. So that's my quick little knee jerk. Oh my God, no one's going to be able to see Nebraska. Oh, look at the ratings. Look at the numbers. It'll be okay. Oregon, Nebraska will be fine. Anxious to see how things shake out, and record and stature will help or hurt that number, but it always seemed to not matter when you're on Black Friday on ABC, be it playing Colorado or even Iowa the first couple of years. Mike Babcock going to join us shortly. Husker first baseman Ben Miller in 1 hour. And former Husker and Washington Redskin Spencer Long at 5 o'clock. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Mr. PGA, Mr. Husker Golf. Anxious to see Shuey. His second time this week, I'll see him. And we'll talk Tiger. That's coming up here on a Wednesday. Hail Varsity continues presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
15 minutes away, Mike Shewhart going to join us. Shuey will be in. We'll talk Tiger Woods situation with him. Spencer Long, Washington center, former Husker in hour two. Ben Miller is off to Corvallis. We had a chance to chat with him first. Welcome in Mike Babcock of HailVarsity.com and magazine at MD Babs on Twitter. Historian, author, Hall of Famer, 39 years and counting Nebraska coverage. Babbers, gorgeous weather. Your yard looks fabulous, man. How are you?
Yeah, well, you look at it from a distance and those green weeds look like it's yard.
Oh, it looks good. Looks good, man.
That's good.
I mean, don't ever bump into Jack Pierce and tell him you got a better yard than him, but, I mean, your yard looks good. I tell you that.
Just look at it from a distance. That's all I'm saying.
Well, looking at Corvallis from a distance, what do you think of this draw? What do you think of Nebraska? You've been around Coach Erstad and the program all season, and what's your reaction? How do you think the guys are feeling?
You know, I think they're feeling, you know, obviously they're excited to be in a regional. I'm not, you know, some people were concerned, I guess, of the, oh, Nebraska got sent to the number one national seed. I think at this time of year, you don't know what's going to happen, and I don't think that it's going to be any less competitive if you would have got sent to LSU or any of those other those places. So many of them are in the southeastern United States. I think it's a, you know, you play your best, and you never know what's going to happen. The example I guess I would use is that remember back in 2006 when Nebraska played host to a regional,
mm-hmm.
and the Huskers lost the first game to Manhattan and the second game to San Francisco, and were out. I mean, you just don't know what's going to happen at regional time. So the Corvallis thing doesn't concern me. In the same way, I guess, that it does some people. But certainly it'll be very competitive, and Nebraska needs to be focused on that Yale game, which is what Erstad said.
Yeah, he's reiterated that a lot, that we're not playing Oregon State, it's Yale. So did you get the sense, and maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but I think Nebraska's anxious for that opportunity, pay the proper respect and go beat Yale, that'll be good. But get another crack at Oregon State, because they didn't play very good baseball against Oregon State. Oregon State had a lot to do with that, but Nebraska wasn't as sharp that early in the year. Do you get that sense that they want another crack at them?
Well, yeah, no, yeah. I'm sure that Nebraska does. Obviously, you've got to get through Oregon State to win that regional, and you go there with the mindset that you're gonna win the regional. But the other obvious thing is, I guess Nebraska has to hit better than it did a year ago in that Clemson regional when it went 2 and out and was out, hit 26-11 and shut out in the first game. And didn't do very well in the second. So, I think that the Huskers do want, obviously, another crack at Oregon State because of what that means. I mean, you're going to have to go through Oregon State to win that regional. So if Nebraska has a shot at it, you're going to have to. That's the team you're going to have to beat.
Did it sound kind of like Jake Meyers is going to be a bit of a game time decision for that start on Friday?
You know, that's interesting, TJ, because Jake Hollensey actually sort of made the announcement that Jake Meyers was going to be the starter, and then when Darren Erstad was asked about it, he said, "Well, we really haven't made a decision yet," which I think he didn't want to say that it was a certainty, because it would be. They're going to wait and see how Jake is, but I would think that he's going to get that. Going to get that first start, and I think that's what the coaches were thinking, but I don't think they're ready to say that today. But Jake Hollensey was, and obviously Hollensey's been the guy that's been the Friday starter throughout the season, so they're going to change it up a little bit. But it's a game by game thing, and they've got some. They don't have a lot of depth in the bullpen. You know, they lost Ethan Frazier. He's going to have surgery, and there's about four other guys that going into the season they figured maybe would be a part of that bullpen that aren't, you know. So that's the big thing, is they've got to get starters. They got to get innings out of their starting pitchers.
Babbitt's going to switch to football, and a handful of TV times are out, and it's going to be a new dance partner for Nebraska, specifically on Black Friday. Either it's been CBS or ABC for Nebraska, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Colorado, and Nebraska, Iowa. Now it's FS1. What's your reaction here? Is that going to be strange to see Nebraska on FS1 for the Black Friday game?
You know, I don't know how that's going to play out. Chris, I heard you guys talking about that earlier.
I was kind of whining. Thank you for calling it talking, but
yeah, it's just a different thing. It's the nature of things, and you know, I put it in the category of a lot of things that Husker fans have gotten used to because of the it all gets back, I think, to the national relevance and being in the conversation of the conference title and so forth, and Nebraska just is not in that position to really command that kind of a thing. I guess is the way I would say it. But at least it's still on that Friday. I mean, there was talk at one point that maybe that game wouldn't be a Friday game anymore. So you still get some exposure there. I see it's. 4 o'clock Eastern, so 3 o'clock start. Is that right?
Yep.
So you still get the exposure potential, and you know, I don't know how many homes across the country get FS1. I guess I look at it and figure I get it. So I don't look at it quite in the same way that other people do. To me, the more disturbing thing, to be honest with you, was that Nebraska is playing that Friday night game. Now, I know it's at Illinois, but I wish that Nebraska would have been like several other teams in the Big Ten and said, you know, I'm not interested.
Why do you think Nebraska, do you think they didn't have leverage, or they weren't interested? They'll take any TV time that's handed out.
You know, that's a good question, and I don't have an answer for that.
Right.
But, like I said, I just wish that Nebraska wasn't involved in it. I think it's a bad idea. I wish the Big Ten would have. I know the Big Ten said it was going to scale back on those games, but I didn't like seeing that. And I know Illinois probably doesn't draw all that well and so forth, but recruiting has become such an important thing. I guess even when you're on the road, playing on a Friday night, going against high school football is just not a good idea. You know, I think the Big Ten made a big mistake and putting trying this Friday night experiment, which I'm not in favor of it at all. And that was the thing that I, when I saw Nebraska Illinois, was it going to be a Friday night game? I guess I should have looked at the pocket schedules because I could have figured it out that way. But this just brought it to the forefront for me.
Babbers, do you have a kind of projection or a thought as far as maybe an announcement by Coach Riley on if anything on Antonio Reed or Stanley Morgan Jr.? Do you think that'll be more closer to the season, or do you think post Friday Night Lights stuff, or do you have any thought?
Well, no, I think it'll be. I don't think it'll be right immediately because I think their court dates are what,
June
6th of June,
yeah.
and maybe there was one that was a little later than that. But so I think that has to happen first, and then I don't know whether. My guess is it's probably going to be an internal thing that there's not going to be a big deal made of it. I was just disappointed that they got themselves in that situation. Particularly Stanley Morgan, who, by all accounts, was going to be one of the leaders of the team, to be in that situation, I guess. That was disappointing. But, no, I don't think there'll be anything immediately. I think the court thing has to play out first. And then my sense is that it's probably going to be a low-key thing, kind of similar to some other situations that they've had in the past.
Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Radio, hailvarsity.com, at MD Babs on Twitter. Mike, about 60 seconds here, bud. Yearbook just around the corner. Do we have a release date for the yearbook?
I'm not certain about that, what Aaron's plan is for the
sure.
release date of it. I know that I'm just in the midst of going through the proofing stage. I think all the copy is basically in, and we're going through proofs now. So it ain't gonna be too long before we get that stuff sent to the printer, and then I think it takes a couple of weeks actually,
mm-hmm.
because of the size of the issue, to get the printer to put it together. But it's certainly going to be worth it, and a little more timely, I think, than the earlier. Some of the issues that you magazines that you see on the newsstand are a little bit outdated already because of things that have happened.
Well, this sounds like it's going to be our best yet. By our, I mean Hail Varsity's. It looks and sounds like it's going to be phenomenal.
I think we've always taken a step forward with the yearbook because we've learned things. So. A little bit like playing Oregon State at the beginning of the year, and then you know a little bit
right
more.
On.
So we've had some in the past, and we've learned a little bit.
Well, I can't wait. Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Radio .com and Hail Varsity Magazine. Mike, we'll catch up next week. Always fun to chat. Thanks for your time today, bud.
Hey, great talking to you guys. Keep up the good work.
Appreciate it. Mike Babcock with us. Love chatting with Babbers. He is, man, that yearbook's going to be something. Can't wait for it. Can't wait for Mike Shewhart. Shuey's shortly. He's not even in the green room. He's just hanging out in the hallway eyeing me. So we'll talk some golf, Wilderness Ridge Golf with Mike Shewhart. Spencer Long's 20 minutes away, and Ben Miller for Nebraska baseball, also an hour two. Caller three and caller four. Right now, a six-month online subscription for you to HailVarsity.com, the ultimate online fan experience. Unparalleled coverage, message board, inside info, recruiting analysis, breaking news, caller three, caller four. Right now, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865, caller three, caller four, a six-month online subscription for you to HailVarsity.com, caller three and four now.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
He's ready to rock. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart, Shuey, is in. That's a fabulous Wilderness Ridge polo. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Log on, get a tee time. Went Monday on the Talon course, the nine-hole course, and I finished four in my group of four, but I had a good time, is the point. You can dial up 402-434-5106. Go see Chris Thompson, PGA Professional Director of Golf, Mike Shuhart, Director of Instruction. Shuey will give you some awesome lessons. And here's the thing. There's membership benefits. There's membership pricing. There's deals and fun during the week. Great rates and specials on Friday as well, especially for the nine-hole. I mean, it is special. It is phenomenal. It is gorgeous. And then there's that deck you can have a cocktail on and watch the sunset. Wilderness Ridge Golf, wildernessridgegolf.com. Mike Shuhart is here. Shuey, what do you know, man?
Nothing. I saw you out there working on your game the other day.
Yeah, I need a lot of work.
You're working on it, though.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You saw me playing, and I started better. I mean, that's the first time I'd swung all year. And nice. Like, my tee shot went at least straight, not super far. And then everybody behind me hadn't played yet this year either, except my dad, who lives on a golf course down in Arizona. I mean, he's just, that's what he does. His shots were great, and they should be, because that's what he does three times.
Pretty
that's
much.
Air quote work, him and that noobering.
Yeah.
So, but everyone else who played got better, and I got worse. So it's kind of the same old story for me, and I will consult your tutelage shortly with it. But I wanted to ask you here, the story this week, the story Monday, as people were finishing hot dogs and hamburgers, Tiger Woods, DUI, the photo has made its rounds on social media and on ESPN and everywhere, so the mugshot, his explanation and response to what happened. Today the arrest video is supposed to come out. I have not seen that. I don't know if it's out yet or not. But I wanted to get your thoughts here because I've done a lot of reading on this. And you're a guy who was on tour with Tiger. And I wanted to get your kind of reaction to what you're seeing from him. And we've been doing this show a long time, the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Uh-huh. And we've spent a lot of time talking Tiger because there's just always something new and it's not usually good with him.
Man, there's no question. It's like there just seems to be one thing after another after another after another. And it's like, you know, part of that's what happens when you're Tiger Woods, man. He's one of the most iconic figures out there, sports figures, you know. And when something happens and his name's involved in it, it becomes headline news. You know, it's kind of sad, you know, to watch what's happening to him, you know. And again, I don't know the whole story. I don't know if nobody ever will know the whole story.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, you watch him and you see how great he's been, but you don't know him because he's been so
guarded,
private.
Yeah, you know, it's like, does he have two different lives?
Well,
obviously,
apparently,
apparently he does.
That, two different phones.
Yeah, that's come out, you know. So it's like
it's a 6-year-old joke, but it's still there.
Yeah. That to me is a frustrating part because I look at Tiger as what he did in golf and what he does for golf and things like that, and unbelievable, you know. But then it's like, wow, is he kind of lied to us, you know, because he lives a whole nother lifestyle, you know. It's like I work with a lot of juniors, you know, and I admire Tiger for what he does, and I talk to them about the things that he does and wanting to model themselves a little after him, and it's like, man, now I'm kind of wishing I wouldn't have said those things.
From a technique or a drive standpoint, that's not a bad carrot to chase, but just the actions as a whole.
Yeah.
It's got to be careful.
Yeah. There's too many other great players out there that are lead a normal life, if you want to call it that.
Will you tell me this? How, when you get to the level you've been at professionally and also from a coaching standpoint, you're a regular dude. You're extremely talented. You've worked hard to get there, but you have balance, okay? And you hear that. It's kind of a buzzword in the world today from a work standpoint.
Yeah.
You need balance, and there's some of us that work on balance. There's some of us that can achieve balance, and I'm a work in progress on balance. And you look at Tiger, and there was no balance in his life at all, and now that he can't go do what he's been doing at the level he's been doing it, there's some issues there.
Yeah.
And the guy's never failed before. So not to get too psycho babble-ish here,
But yeah,
but I can kind of understand where he is. He has lost, and there's no hope. And he's not really been the same since his pops passed away either.
No, you know. But at the same time, it's like what comes along with elevating yourself to that type of standard. I mean, you have to be smart enough to figure out that you are a lot more under scrutiny. Mm-hmm. You have to conduct yourself differently. I mean, that's just the way that it is. You know, I go back into when Charles Barkley made a comment as, I'm not a role model. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you are a role model. You don't have any choice. You can't have it one way and not the other. If you're going to take all the accolades and all the glory and all the money and everything that goes along with it, the fame, you can't act the way that you want to act because of that. You have a responsibility. So it's like, man, Tiger knows he's under this scrutiny. So it's like, why? You got to be a little more careful about the things that you do, where you go, and how you do it. And it's like, he's having a little trouble understanding that, you know. I mean, you can't be getting picked up the way he is. But again, I don't know the whole story. That's a hard thing because supposedly.
Is it just a reaction, or is this a process where this is the umpteenth time he's driven and been under the influence of painkillers? I mean, we just don't know, and he won't tell you.
That's the thing. Come on. Just tell me the truth. Quit lying. I just want to know the truth. Just tell me the truth. Be a straight-up guy about the whole thing. You know, it's like, really, what happened? Yes, I had a reaction to this medication that was on. But it's like, well, how come your two front left tires were blown out? Your rear end was destroyed. You were in the ditch, found sleeping. So it's like, well, is that a reaction to the medication? Then it's like, holy smokes, man. You're out at 3:30 in the morning driving around, not conscious at the wheel. I mean, that's dangerous.
It's dangerous for so many others, not just yourself. And, you know, from a kidney stone standpoint, I'll pop some pain pills they've given me for it. And I'm moving from the lazy boy. I don't know how the hell you get behind a wheel.
Exactly. So, again, it's hard because, again, you don't know the whole story, and hopefully more will come out. But, I mean, to me, it's really sad.
You won't let it come out, man.
And yeah, that's true. It won't come out. And I don't think, you know, obviously he got picked up for DUI, but it's like, well, he blew a 0.0. So it's like, well, he wasn't under the influence of alcohol.
No, but.
But what was he under the influence?
I have this thing in my mind where he's, and this is just crazy here, but he's trying to get home from whatever he's been doing. It's like the Wolf of Wall Street scene where it's a delayed reaction to a quaalude, and he thinks he got home one way and he ended up bumper carring his way home
exactly
the other way. We will spend some more time. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment is here. Weekly specials you can find out about at wildernessridge.com. Membership benefits you can find out about now, and the pricing there for your budget, wildernessridgegolf.com, 402-434-5106. Director of Instruction, Nebraska Assistant, Mike Shewhart. More with Shuey when we come back on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Blackshirt Jay will be back next week. TJ Henning is in, Chris Schmidt, Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, wildernessridgegolf.com. And I got the old Lincoln Orthopedic Open out there on Friday. That's going to be fun. Excited for that.
That's why you were out there the other day. You were sharp. Well,
I needed that. I needed to get ready.
A little tune up before the big tournament.
A lot of tuning up.
So, the whole Tiger thing is pretty sad, but one kind of funny little thing that came out of it was when they asked him to recite the alphabet, he offered to say the national anthem backwards.
What?
Could either of you guys do that?
I can't do that sober either way. I can't do the alphabet, and I can't do the national anthem.
I tried
to do that the other day. I had to sing it first, and then I tried like the last couple words.
You'd almost have to.
That's so hard.
You'd have to write it out and then memorize it backwards.
You would.
I couldn't do the alphabet.
I can't believe he offered to do that.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. He must work on that, though, that situation.
That must be like part of his like Marine thing. You know, you got to love America, and you got to be able to recite the national anthem backwards.
That's pretty impressive, though.
I wanted to get your thoughts here, Shuey, before we say goodbye on the PGA pros. you and many others. Thoughts on Tiger as he came in 96, and thoughts on him now, because there's been as closed off nationally as he is. Seemed like he's warmed up to some guys on tour and vice versa.
He's an incredibly well-respected guy out there. And he's a good friend to a lot of those guys, you know.
Is he really just one of the guys?
Yeah, beyond belief. He's just one of the guys when he's out there. It was really evident if you would have watched the Ryder Cup when he was one of the captains or whatever. He was assistant captain or whatever his title really was. I mean, he interacted with those guys. They interacted with him. He was awesome, you know. He did whatever he had to do to help those guys basically perform, you know. And that is who he is. He's a golfer. He loves golf. You know, that's what those guys are. He is really just one of the guys, and he's well-respected out there. The guys really like him a lot, you know.
They understand
him, too, and what he did for golf. You know, it's like, whether they like to believe it or not.
That dude's paid more.
I mean, he was one of the reasons guys got paid more. I mean, Tiger was a draw. I mean, he had a lot of clout. TV contracts and sponsorship contracts that came up. I mean, it benefited everybody out there because
the Masters stayed on CBS, wasn't on FS1.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, he is one of the guys out there they really like him a lot out there, you know, and he is a really good dude. I mean, he's just a normal guy if you get to know him, you know, but you just don't get to know people like that, you know.
There's hoops to go through. There's,
you know,
buffers. There's a ton of things.
You just don't. People of that type of stature, you just don't walk up to on the street. But you could if you had the opportunity and you happen to run into him somewhere, if that ever happened. He's a pretty good dude. He's a really good dude.
That's good to hear. Shuey, we'll talk more next week about golf and Tiger and what's going on with the tour.
We're going to talk about your round Friday.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
You're going to be riding next to me, you and Dr. Brandon, in case I hurt myself.
I got to fix your swing and you got to fix your body.
Yeah, big time. Spencer Long, All-American in Nebraska, center for Washington next on Team Jack.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day, day by day, we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat, beat.
We get beat, beat.
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk Team Jack Foundation, the inaugural golf scramble coming up June 24th, Quarry Oaks, 9 a.m. And a guy that is pretty good with the clubs and better on the offensive line, proud to be part of Team Jack, is Spencer Long with us. Spencer, it is great to catch up with you again. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And let's talk a little bit about Team Jack, your relationship with the Hoffmans, and why Team Jack is so important and so special to you.
Well, it really kind of started with our class and Rex Burkhead back in college when, you know, the Team Jack Foundation, you know, really came into effect. And we started, you know, he started, you know, just mainly with Rex, but it really, you know, translated into our entire class. And it really hit home with us because it's something I've been, you know, dealing with since I was, you know, young in college. And we got to meet a lot of, you know, great young individuals, young families going through some hard times. And it really, you know, we developed relationships with these people. And the foundation does such great work. And how could you not, you know, feel connected and you know, empowered by that? And it's something I feel is, you know, very important to prioritize, and something I feel is close to home.
It is, and you mentioned your class, yourself and Jeremiah Searles and Kenny Bell and Amir and Will Compton. I mean, all of you guys and Rex, you donate time, but you do it because you care, you know?
At the Team Jack Gala, it was almost like a class reunion. It was really cool to see.
Well, and that's fantastic that you guys keep in touch and have a common goal and desire to help Team Jack. And Spencer, what's it mean to you? I mean, you grew up in this state. You're a kid from Elkhorn. You know what Nebraska football's about. You were tremendous at it when you played at Nebraska, but you know the impact of being a Nebraska football player has for fans, but also for kids battling adversity.
Yeah, like you said, I was born in Omaha, moved out to Elkhorn when I was six, but we've been going to games since I was a kid, and it was a family event for us. It was, we'd go to my aunt and uncles that lived out in Lincoln, and we'd spend the day there, and then go to the game and come back and hang out. And Nebraska football has always been close to my heart, and it was super special for me to be able to play there. And you know, coming out of high school, you know, let alone an offer from Nebraska, not an offer, but you know, a preferred walk-on offer, and you know, and also coming from, you know, the team that I grew up loving. So that was pretty special to be able to get the chance to play there, and I wouldn't take it away for the world. So it was awesome.
What was your mindset, your attitude? The preferred walk-on is a badge of honor. Scholarship is what everyone wants, but how did you use that as motivation, or did you, or how did you deal with, you know, your start to the Nebraska experience coming out of high school?
You know, when I came out of high school, I was, you know, under recruited and a little bit underdeveloped, and you know, as I always joke, but it's true, my brother probably got me to UNL because they really wanted him as a preferred walk-on tight end, and I made sure we were a package deal. But you know, walking on, really had a chip on my shoulder, really wanted to prove myself, and really just wanted to see if I could compete with, you know, some top football athletes across the country. So as soon as I figured out I could compete, just took it in stride, and now I'm out in Washington. So it's been a wild ride, but it's crazy where life can take you.
How did that conversation go as a package deal? Who did you speak with, and who were you in contact with?
Well, I remember we first talked to Barney Cotton. He came to our school in Elkhorn and took us both, and, you know, for recruiting, you know, kind of sat us down and talked to us. And, you know, we also had some D1, AA, D2 offers, you know, for actual scholarship money. But, you know, my brother and I and dad had talked, and really we know it was a commitment at any stage. And we were just like, you know, first of all, it's our only D1 offer. Second of all, it's from Nebraska. And, you know, third of all, if you're going to do this thing and put in, you know, a bunch of, because you only do things one way, you got to, you know, work your best and put in all your effort if you want to have success. And if you're going to do that, why not shoot for the stars? So I would have rather, you know, spent, you know, have not being paid a scholarship and really tried to achieve at the highest level. And along with that, the med school program in Nebraska is good. So those are kind of the two decisions that made us pull the trigger.
Spencer Long, a few minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Spencer, a part of the inaugural golf scramble for Team Jack Foundation. Can log on teamjackfoundation.org, get a foursome signed up, sponsorship opportunities, money to fund research for pediatric brain cancer, and help save lives, help improve lives with Team Jack and the Team Jack Foundation. Spencer, when you got to Nebraska, who were you able to compete against that made you better, and who did you learn from on the offensive line?
Well, I started out, I was recruited as a defensive end. I was 250. I was undersized, underdeveloped, and I started out on the scout team D-line. And John Garrison, at the time, was our GA running the scout team D-line. And I got to give a lot of credit to him for his recognition in me that I could be a good offensive lineman. So they bumped me into defensive tackle, and they're like, well, you better put on some weight so you don't get tossed, you know, by Keith Williams and Ricky Henry and all those guys, and Mike Caputo and, you know, all those guys, and Hickman. So, I mean, I had to put on weight fast. And so 20 pounds, not the best weight, but I put on 20 pounds probably a month, and I was still moving at a good speed. And John Garrison, you know, pulled me aside after the season. He's like, I think I see some potential in you as an offensive lineman. Would you like to make the switch? And I said, well, coach, whatever's going to get me closer to the field. And then sure enough, next spring ball, I was playing guard, and the rest is history. So I got to owe a lot of credit to him. And I just continue to put on strength from, you know, body by James Dobson. So, you know, continue to put weight on and develop in the position, and Now I'm here. So
you are, and you're in Washington, and All-American your senior year. Really talented offensive line group. You yourself, of course, with Searles and Qualley. I mean, all guys in the league. You've started for the majority of your career, and you started at guard, but you've also been at center the last season. How's that transition been? I mean, you make it look easy. Washington's one of the top offensive lines in the NFL, and you're the guy making the calls, making the right reads, and protecting Kirk.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. The first time I moved over, and that first couple of weeks of transition wasn't pretty, and there were some serious growing pains going on there. But I just, you know, I had to keep at it, and I really have found, you know, after all this time, I think I've found my home. I know there's something that matches my skill set, especially at this level, to the, you know, the best. So my mental game and physical game match up at center, and I finally feel like I've got a home. But, you know, going in, getting that first start at center, I would be lying if I told you my nerves weren't high. But, you know, the snap brings in a whole nother asset or a whole nother component to blocking. You have to, you know, snap first, and but really it's just repetition and sticking to it and believing in yourself. So, and it turned out well. So
yeah,
I feel more comfortable now than I ever have in my whole career at center. So hopefully we can put another season together.
That's I mean, it looks that way, but your skill set, for, I mean, you make it look easy, but your skill set being the mobility and the intelligence and the physicality, but also just from a technique standpoint, give kind of the football nerds a little look-see here. Just the different techniques you got to use, and then some of the similar techniques you use from guard at center. I mean, how do you combine the spots, I guess, and then factor in that snap?
So pass protection at a guard stand from a guard standpoint is very difficult, especially in the NFL, going against, you know, some of the best three techniques in the world. That really helped me become a strong pass protector at center. But, you know, getting the snap down and you know, doing run blocking and wide reaching and stuff like that is a whole other component that I had to learn. It's almost brand new. And to me, being playing on all three interior spots, the hardest block in football is, you know, a snap hand reach, man reach on the wide zone play. And that's something I'm still working on to this day. But, you know, it was, like I said, there were some growing pains, and I'm still learning, and I'm getting better by the day, so I'm excited to see what the future can hold.
A name familiar to Nebraska fans, and you watched his teams before you got to Nebraska, Bill Callahan. He's the offensive line coach, and he's pretty much gold in the NFL as the best offensive line coach, or right up there. You look at Dallas, I know they're a division rival, but that was kind of his architecture with their offensive line. Now he's with Washington. He's been with Coach Gruden. What's it been like to work with him? And tell us a little insight here on the type of teaching he provides. I mean, his rep is well known. What makes it so?
I've learned so much in the last 2 years under Coach Callahan, and you know, we call him the mad scientist. He's got so many tools, so many tools for you, you know, to put in your toolbox that you can use. And it's really, he's really adaptive to each player and their strengths. And, you know, I've learned so much about, you know, pass protection and run protection, you know, or I mean, run blocking, you know, from him. And really, it's just the guy has a pure passion for offensive line play and a passion into the line room. And it translates to his guys. And we love him. We're a loyal bunch, and we work well together, and it's really just, you know, putting in that extra work and you know, taking his teaching and translating it onto the field. And you know, he's constantly working. He's dedicated and motivated, and any coach that, you know, is in here like that trying to make you a better player, you know, you have a real respect for. So that's where we're at, and you know, we trust him, and it's been great.
What's the culture like? What's that locker room like in Washington? I mean, always in contention. 2015 was a playoff run for you guys. I mean, Kirk's been tremendous, and Nebraska fans remember him when he was at Michigan State. Will's a Nebraska player. Compton on the defensive side, you have Niles there. Roy was there for a little bit, so you had some familiarity there. But how's it been in your transition from college to the NFL, just from a life standpoint, not just on the football field?
Yeah, I mean, the transition, it's always rough your rookie year. It's just like, that's just the way it is, and it's a rite of passage. But, you know, in the last few years, our locker room has gone more and more tight-knit, and our coaching staff and everybody is, we're a family out here, so it's a great atmosphere to work in, and it couldn't be better, and I just, it makes work fun, so and we come together and play better as a unit when we trust each other, and that's the kind of culture that's going on right now, and we're just going to keep rising and keep going forward.
Got to ask you about Nebraska 2017. You keep your eyes and ears with some guys back in Lincoln, I assume. Any thoughts, any impressions of Nebraska from what you're hearing? Got a new quarterback, got a 3-4 defensive scheme. Thoughts on this upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, this last senior class that left last year was the last, two group of guys that I really knew personally. But there's a lot of excitement around the building right now, and I can see it. And the culture, is now, rooted into that system now. And I'm really excited to see what they can do with it. And, it's just, I gotta be able to see those guys. And so we'll see, it's exciting to be able to, get ready to watch a new group and see what they can do.
Spencer Long with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Team Jack Foundation, Spencer part of it, the inaugural golf scramble, Cory Oaks, June 24th, 9 a.m. tee time. Log on, get your team in or get signed up. TeamJackFoundation.org. Funding for research for pediatric brain cancer. Funding for research, funding for support to families, and trying to comfort those fighting this battle. Spencer, you're not a stranger to Cory Oaks. I have about 2 minutes here. A good Spencer Long golf shot story at Cory Oaks. Can you share one?
Well, I remember we took old Searles out there, me and Matt Floss. We used to train together in the offseason until he moved out to California for the Chargers. But, me and Floss have been golfing for a little while, and Jay was relatively new at the time. So we just had a little coaching sesh out there, and it was a lot of fun. And Jay's got some natural ability, man. He'll sneak up on you. But, it's just a lot of fun to be able to go to a super nice course that is Cory, and it's public, but it's beautiful, and I have a lot of fun golfing out there, and it's halfway between Lincoln and Omaha, so it's a great location and one of my favorite places to play in Nebraska.
It's kind of your home course, isn't it?
I mean, I wouldn't call it my home course. Probably Indian Creek, because it's 2 minutes away from my parents' house, so probably played there the majority of growing up, and it's really, really convenient, but I really do love Cory Oaks. I've been there a lot.
Well, we'll see you there on the 24th of June for the Team Jack Foundation inaugural golf scramble. Spencer Long helping Team Jack Foundation, doing great work with Washington. Spencer, love to see you again, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks for a few minutes, bud.
Yep, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Spencer Long, Washington Redskins, some in-depth and inside info on that transition from center after playing guard, and his story with Nebraska and his story with Team Jack and the Hoffman family and the Team Jack Foundation golf outing, the first annual out of Cory Oaks, the 24th of June, I think a 9:30 start time on the 24th. A lot of fun, and obviously an amazing cause, raising funds for the fight against pediatric brain cancer. Please think about doing that tournament for sure. Sauter Heyman, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. Time to see Rick. I mean, you got to get Mama some summer bling is what I'm telling you. Pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds. They're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. What's that mean to you? Well, they're still beautiful. They have the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds, and they are also eco-friendly. And yes, sustainable. 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mine diamonds. Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure grown diamonds and some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. Go see Rick today, this weekend, and see how beautiful those pure grown diamonds are. 12th and O, downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln, around Weston, Grand Island. Log on today, sauterheyman.com. Husker first baseman Ben Miller next.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Husker baseball is off to Corvallis, Oregon State Regional. And Husker first baseman and pitcher Ben Miller with us. Ben, congrats on the season. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing all right. Now, take me through It's been a while since we've talked, so I need to find out from you just yesterday as what you were doing, how you kind of soaked in the ESPN announcement that you guys were headed to play Oregon State again.
Yeah, we just had a watch party at the field. All the players and coaches were there, just kind of seeing where we were going. And, we were watching the show and had a little lunch. And then right after that was announced, kind of took it in, then got right back to work. And we had a lift yesterday right after. So we didn't take too much time out of our days for it, but practice today, and we're definitely ready.
Were there any nerves in that watch party at all, or were you confident you guys were going somewhere?
Oh, we were really confident. There wasn't anything like last year when it was a bubble team. We were pretty confident just seeing where it was going to be, and we're pretty happy. We want to go out there and make some noise.
A few minutes here, Ben Miller with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Ben, I'm going to ask you about Oregon State, and I know Yale's who you take on first. I'm going to ask you about Oregon State just because, well, you face them. It's a common opponent. What's your recollection of them? What do you think of Oregon State from the surprise series down in February?
I mean, they're definitely a good ball club. Clearly, their record says that, and they're number one host site. But, they definitely have good pitching and have some guys that can swing the bat. So we just need to play our game, and good things will happen. Play hard and play smart, and hopefully our pitching will pound the zone and we'll get those hits when we need them. We didn't really do that in the Big Ten tournament, but hopefully that'll come our way now, and definitely get it rolling at the right time.
So Chris asked you about Oregon State. I'll ask you about Yale, your first opponent. Have you seen any tape on them? Do you know much about them?
No, we don't know much about. I mean, we haven't really gotten into it. Yesterday was when we figured out we were playing them, so we haven't really looked too much into it. I'm sure the coaches have done more, but I'm sure if they're in a regional, they won their league. They're a good ball club, so can't overlook them at all. We got them tough opponent first, and then hopefully Oregon State. So definitely going game by game, but I don't know much about them right now.
How do you feel personally going in? How's the bat been, and are you in a good spot mentally and physically to drive in some runs this weekend?
Yeah, I definitely feel good. I mean, rested up, and I'm getting knocked out of the Big Ten tournament pretty early. We didn't use too many of our arms too much, so I think a lot of the guys, their arms are feeling good. But me personally, I feel pretty good. I'm definitely ready to get out there and start the postseason play because this is the best time of the year, I think.
What was it like in the Big Ten tournament? I mean, it seemed, well, for lack of a better term, pretty choppy with the schedule, with the weather. Yeah. I mean, how did you guys deal with that?
Definitely there were some weather delays, and then a few games went over, so we had to cancel it and go the next day. But that's kind of Coach Erstad preaches, kind of just be where you need to be when you need to be there. And baseball throws you some crazy things, so just being able to react and not let it get out of proportion. We kind of easily took on having that Friday off day because that game after us got moved to the next day. So we just kind of relaxed around the hotel, got up and did a workout, and the coaches do a good job of even if we have an off day or the schedule changes, to help us kind of get into the role of things like we're doing a weekend series, and we know exactly what's going on.
So the Big Ten got five teams in. Now you play in the Big Ten Conference. Do you think the perception of the league is getting stronger?
I definitely think the Big Ten league is getting better teams. Teams like Iowa and us and Maryland's been pretty good, and Michigan's getting better and better. So I definitely think there's some teams that have been improving steadily for a while now, and it's only going to get better as the Big Ten kind of gets better facilities and kind of reaches the point to where those southern schools are and they can practice a little earlier and be a little more prepared when the season starts.
Couple more minutes, Ben Miller with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Ben, is there, and I don't want to say an overconfidence, but is there a comfort level with Oregon State knowing that you've seen them before?
I, mean, I wouldn't say we're comfortable, but we're ready for the challenge, and I think there's a lot of guys that are hungry for it, and especially the new guys that really haven't experienced yet, just kind of getting their feet wet and trying to help them along as a senior who's been to three now. But, I mean, just I think the guys are ready, and we're not taking anything for granted, and we're definitely not overlooking any teams. We're just ready to go out there and compete whoever we got that day, and see where that takes us.
You're a senior class that, like you mentioned, has been to three postseasons, and that has been what, you know, Nebraska baseball has wanted to be about, and you've kind of helped restore that. What is your message, not only about culture, but just expectation for the freshmen or for the kids redshirting now, or for anyone who's thinking about coming to Nebraska? I mean, what's this program standard you want to leave to others? How are you going to pay it forward?
I mean, I guess just kind of doing things the right way, and like Coach Urs has told us, the goal is kind of leave the program in a better spot than it was when you got here, and definitely I think for my class specifically we've done that, and I mean, just recruits coming in, they see everything. They go on tours and see all the facilities we got, and get run through on the baseball history. So I think just the legacy that Nebraska has, and the tradition that we have, baseball and every other sport, and kind of the staff department in general.
How's
made it kind of, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I mean, it's just made it kind of fun place to play, and really excited to finish it out, and for the new guys that will be coming in next year and years after. There's a good foundation. Hopefully they can keep building.
How has Coach Urstad managed this year, and also the senior leadership managed the ups and downs this year? Not to go history on you here, but the start wasn't great. The middle part was fantastic. You finished strong. You won a league title. And there was so much joy in the locker room by doing that. And then there was some more out there for you. If you ask Coach Urstad about the Big Ten tournament, specifically the sting of losing a tight one against Maryland, how have you managed the roller coaster? Because it's been a lot of ups and downs, and you guys have kept grinding.
Yeah, I mean, that's baseball. There's always going to be ups and downs, whether it be personally, like hitting or pitching. But just as a team in general, I mean, you can never be good every day, so. Just being able to handle those ups and downs and getting to the next game, and not really looking too much into the statistics or how certain people are playing, just kind of going day to day and what can you do for the team today. So, I mean, I think we've had that mentality. It's kind of what Urstad has preached to us, and definitely I think how he played when he was a ball player. I think that's definitely come down on us, and we're definitely trying to exemplify that when we're playing, and it's worked so far, and hopefully we keep it going.
Last thought here on one of your teammates, and that's Mojo. What prompted him for the haircut, or was it kind of a suggestion?
I have no clue. I mean, I haven't really didn't really talk to him about it. We're definitely a close group of guys, a team. But somehow that slipped through. He didn't really ask anyone. I think he just went back home and had the opportunity and took advantage of it.
He got chopped, and you're like, yeah, cool, all right. Now, yeah. Ben, I got to ask you about Clive, Iowa. I had a chance to visit Clive about a month ago, a little less than a month ago, for a baseball tournament. Dude, you've got a great community for youth baseball out there between the fields and all the places to go feed your face. I mean, it was pretty awesome for me to see for the first time, but you grew up living that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm really proud of where I came from, and Clive specifically, but the whole Des Moines area, metro area, there's a lot to do there. I mean, a lot of people overlook it because it's Iowa, but I really liked growing up there, and I mean, youth baseball definitely there is growing, and I think it will continue to grow, so, which is really good for the state of Iowa. And, I mean, bringing in those teams from the surrounding states for tournaments and stuff is also good for the community. And I just really, really enjoy it, and who knows where I'll go after baseball, but if it's there, I won't be mad.
Hey, Ben, is there a guy in the majors who you like to study and model your game after?
I mean, I don't really really look too much into one single player. I mean, I like the bigger guys. Now, David Ortiz has done kind of hard to watch anyone else, but I don't really look at anyone too closely.
Best of luck, Ben Miller with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Huskers off to the Oregon State Regional. Ben, thanks for your time, and enjoy the weekend. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Ben Miller, Big Ben, and Nebraska off to Corvallis. Good to catch up with him. He's a Big Poppy guy. Clive, Iowa is an underrated part of the world. Yeah, I know some of you are like, quit talking Iowa, Schmidt. It was great. I've been to Iowa a couple times the last 3 years of my life. One, there was a flurry of neck tattoos and back tattoos. And that still was the case at the water park. But when it came to eating and drinking beer and spending time with the kids after baseball, some great options in Clive, Iowa. Water park, no. Restaurants and just the fields they have for youth baseball, yes.
All right.
Impressive. Separate them.
Separate them.
Okay. Water park, people watch. Someone's meth trailer just blew up and they went to cool off. And then there's the park.
The good food.
And the good food. Okay. Speaking of good food, Haymarket Park has that for you. Family four-pack now to the Salt Dogs. They can be yours. What color, TJ?
Let's go with five today.
Cinco. Collar five, now a family four-pack to Haymarket Park to see the Salt Dogs. I can't guarantee a walk-off, but it may happen. Collar five right now, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865, a family four-pack for the Lincoln Salt Dogs. And get those vouchers from us here at ESPN and Hale Varsity. Collar five makes it happen. Just be nice to TJ on the phone. 466-3776, 466-3776. Toll free at 800-825-5865. Collar five, a four-pack for the Salt Dogs. A Jock Doc coming up. Hale Varsity rolls forward, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Chris. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right. I got through the holiday weekend and a lot of news and notes with Major League Baseball. And what a year Mike Trout has had. And now you have injury. Dr. Brandon, let's spend a few minutes on Mike Trout today. What's your reaction to this as not only a baseball fan, but also a medical expert when you look at the thumb situation?
Absolutely. Well, you know, just as a general fan, I mean, terrible news. I really think he's a fantastic player. He seems like a great guy, too. It's been fun watching him just, knocking home runs out this year. He's been on just an absolute tear. So you hate to see him kind of lose out on that opportunity. Obviously, the Angels haven't benefited from his success. But at any rate, a pretty bad injury. Down the road, I think he's going to do just fine from this. I think the biggest issue, it's going to take him out for quite a while. And again, you kind of lose all that hard work you've put into and in the kind of amazing season he was having. You kind of lose all of that now as he kind of looks at a pretty extensive recovery, I think is going to be the case.
6 to 8 weeks is the word. And I wanted to get your thoughts here on the thumb. I know he's going into second base, jacked his thumb. And it's a UCL of that left thumb, and he's a righty, and I first and foremost think of his grip on the bat with that thumb at the at the bottom of the bat, and just the strength. And first explain UCL, what that is, and how you guys repair it.
Sure. So if you're, if you're looking at your thumb, and you're kind of getting down to the base of your thumb, and you got two joints that kind of bend down. It's kind of that first one that bends down. Essentially what he did is the UCL sits on kind of the inside part of your thumb. It's, if you will, the knuckle of your thumb. And what it does, it stops or stabilizes the thumb from kind of traveling more towards the inside of your body or the inside of your elbow. That's what we'd call the radial side. And so it's kind of a stabilizing force in that direction kind of an opposite direction as to like what the Tommy John ligament would do for your elbow. But essentially what this does, you kind of lose the ability to support over this. So if you grab onto something and you try to apply direct pressure in that way, basically you'll kind of gap open or open up that joint, and then you can't generate the force that you need in that direction. And so that's essentially what this is. It's a very small ligament, very much different from a size standpoint of what you see in the elbow with the Tommy John. But it can be very problematic, especially in somebody like him with what he does. And obviously you mentioned the grip, which is really important. And so there's a couple ways to approach this. In fact, there's probably a good, you know, 3-4 ways to treat this, you know, some being operative, some being conservative. Obviously, again, we're kind of dealing with a high-level athlete here, so you tend to lean a bit more towards the surgery side of these kind of fellas to put them back at that high level. They're going to need, you know, the strongest construct possible as opposed to kind of letting it heal on its own, and I think that's the pathway that he's headed down.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Mike Trout and his UCL surgery. Tell me a little bit about the procedure, how you guys fix it, and then the recovery. They're saying 6 to 8 weeks.
Sure. So what you need to do is provide some type of stabilizing force, stabilizing ligamentous support to that side of the thumb. Again, the ligamentous structures here are quite small, and so going in and trying to, you know, sew this back together, sometimes you can be successful with that in an acute fit setting, but typically those tissues are so small and so frayed, it's hard to impact that. So you could do something as simple as a pinning, where you kind of pin that side of the joint, let things scar in, give that the stability, and then take that pin out, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes sooner, sometimes 3 weeks, and that can give you the stability there. You could do a kind of ligamentous type or soft tissue type of reconstruction, where you could transfer a tendon over from somewhere else, weave that into the area, and that can create the support that you need. I assume that's probably the route they're taking. There's also some newer kind of cool technology out there now, where it's called an internal brace. It's kind of an internal kind of suture bridge, where there's kind of this synthetic tissue with some suture, where you can actually suture across the joint. That's another thing that I'd seen at a big sports meeting recently that they're messing around with. Instead, that might be another option for him. Again, in his situation, I think probably the ligamentous reconstruction is probably the route they will take with the high level that he's at. At any rate, pretty good recovery on those. You know, they're saying, you know, 6-8 weeks. That's pretty optimistic. I would hope that he gets back at that point, but, you know, it could be 3-4 months. And it could be that, you know, here we are, June. It could be that he gets August, mid-August, like, you know, this feels okay. And they're like, well, we're not in the playoff hunt. They may just park him for the rest of the season. I think that's a real possibility at this point. So that's kind of how I would look at that. I think long-term for him, I think he'll do well. You know, this may bother him some, at least initially getting back in the hitting cage, but I think in the end, I think he'll do very well with this. I think he'll get back to the kind of player that he was before. I don't foresee any huge kind of long-term issues if they have good success with this thing healing.
Well, with the healing part, Dr. Brandon, is it just a matter of getting comfortable, or is it something that can feel like old hat, for lack of a better term, again? I mean, is there going to be constant discomfort even after the surgery, or will it feel like it never happened?
I'm guessing initially there'll be some sensitivity there. Anytime you hit 90-mile-per-hour fastballs as hard as he does, I'm guessing there'll be some sensitivity, maybe some sharp pain, at least initially when he gets back taking cracks. But after that, I think he'll work through that. And I bet by the time the season rolls around next year, he's probably doing great, not really feeling much the way of discomfort. There's not a ton of range of motion through that joint either, so even if he ends up a little bit stiff there, I don't think that'll impact him, even at the high level that he's at.
With recovery time, you mentioned 6 to 8 weeks. What's a potential setback as far as why he can't be back with this projection?
Sure. You know, I think the biggest thing you always have to be careful with when you're dealing with these high-level athletes is, you know, here we are talking about, you know, return date. And so what do? We push hard. We, you know, do things maybe a little bit outside the envelope, trying to get them back sooner. And then it's sometimes the little stuff that can sneak up on you. So if he starts doing a bunch of, you know, aerobic exercise, super active stuff right away, maybe you start sweating into your incision, even though it may not be extensive, then you kind of run the risk of maybe an infection. So that would be something that could set him back. And that's a simple thing that you always got to be careful with your high-level athletes because they're so eager and anxious to get back. So you got to be careful with that. You could always have, get some infection in the hardware that you put in there. So if they were to put some suture or, a metal pin or plate or something like that, that could be another infection risk. And then the other thing would just be a matter of, his comfort with getting back and hitting. Again, there's a couple of nerves that sit real close to where you fix this. Again, those can get really irritated, very sensitive. And so then you're back, trying to get in the hitting cage and it's really sensitive. Another area that potentially could cause him a little bit of setback. But I think in the end, this heals well, and I think he gets back to what he wants to do. It's just a matter of the time frame that he does that, and then also do they want to run the risk of being super aggressive with him? And we're already looking at mid-August. Does it really matter? That'll be the question.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Mike Trout, his thumb injury, our topic today. Dr. Brandon, we'll catch up again. Thanks for a few minutes.
You bet. Sounds great, Chris. You guys take care.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right, all right, all right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Busy one today. Big thanks to Ben Miller, Spencer Long, Mike Schuhart, and Mr. Mike Babcock tomorrow. Gary Barnett, Brandon Vogel, maybe a Lars Anderson or Bill Dolman sighting. 7 out of 10, too many. That's the portion of unbuckled vehicle occupants killed on Nebraska roads last year. They'd all been using their seatbelts at a minimum. 69 to be alive today. Save more lives. Buckle up. 60 law enforcement agencies across the state on the lookout for seatbelt violations this month. It is National Click It or Ticket Campaign. 6,000 hours of additional Nebraska traffic enforcement operations will be writing tickets for seatbelt and child restraint violations. So please click it or ticket. Save your life. Save someone else's life. A message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. Shockingly enough, no NBA tonight.
But tomorrow, baby.
Tomorrow we are back. Yeah, that's why we had to get Dolman on the horn here. And hear how KD can screw up the finals.
I was
going
to say, if he's finally worried that this is going to happen now in the finals.
I hope
12-0.
I hope it's an awesome finals.
Oh, man, me too.
I hope
too.
It's as good as Miami-San Antonio. What was that, 3 years ago?
Are you talking the one where Ray Allen hit the three?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was 3 years ago.
3 years ago, that was awesome. Last year's wasn't...
Or maybe 4 years ago.
That's three.
2013?
It's 14. Pretty sure. Because he was still in Miami. Braun was still in Miami.
But they did that his third year in Miami. His fourth year in Miami, they didn't win it. I think that might have been his fourth year, his 2014.
Whatever. Point is you have...
I know what you're talking about.
You have last year's that was crazy.
Oh.
Because it
that was incredible.
3-1 comeback.
Oh, man. LeBron and Kyrie were absolutely amazing. Games 5, 6, and 7.
No, that is good.
But who knows, Had Draymond Green been around, maybe it wouldn't have gone
to
that.
No, I know, and that's what I'm anxious to see Draymond... And Bron.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not Kiwi punch in time. I'm just saying both play at a high level.
Oh, yeah. And then it's as simple as this, man. Last year, you could hide whoever on Harrison Barnes. Now that person is replaced with Kevin Durant. I mean, what are you going to do? It's just, I'd be having nightmares
but
if I'm
Ty Lue. I think Cleveland's a really, really talented team, too.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, obviously, their record says it, Captain Obvious there, but they're all playing well together, and they're all chipping in anywhere between 15 to 40. It's multiple guys doing it, like Golden State. The thing about Golden State is they give a damn about playing defense this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's their thing. This from Uncle Andy on the wrestling front for Nebraska. And this is from newwrestle.com. Or anywrestle.com. That was so bad. Forgive me. Andy is telling me that Isaiah White is transferring to Nebraska. Who's Isaiah White? Well, he's the NCAA Division II national champion. That is good news. 165-pound wrestler, overall record at 28-2. He's the best 152-pound wrestler coming out of high school out of Oak Park, Illinois. So Nebraska wrestler getting a transfer per my wrestling guru, Uncle Andy.
Some wrestling news.
And also this from anywrestle.com. So, yeah, we'll have to give our old buddy Coach Manning a shout sometime on this. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your time. Thank you, TJ Henning. Chris Schmidt back with you tomorrow at 4 on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Have a good one.